Please join me back in Revelation chapter number 12. I want us to begin in verse number 13 again as we do kind of a summary of what we've already talked about. And this section of our study in the book of Revelation is just so busy. It's just so full of so much information. It's a little bit overwhelming, which is why I'd recommend to you to check out my Living in the Last Days Prophecy Seminar Notes, which you can find in the PDF resources section of intotheword.net. And that way you will have something that you can kind of chew on over time and evaluate it for yourself. Be a Berean, check and see if these things are so. And even shoot me an email or something if you want to ask a question or get some clarification or do a little challenge to something that I suggested. Now, I would also mention that I think it's this bulk of material here, as we're moving from the vision of the seven sealed scroll of God's final wrath, that's chapters 4 through 11, into the vision of the war, the long war, between the seed of the woman and the serpent, or the dragon, and that's chapters 12 through 19, and actually just keeps on going to the end of the book in a way. In my studies, which I shared with you at the beginning of this series, I tried to just let the scripture passages lead me to the next point of contact and looked at the wording in the original language and things. And this is really where I decided I was definitely not going to be an amillennialist or a postmillennialist, because too much of what I was seeing seemed to be very literal and seemed to be tied in with a future day of the Lord shortly before the second coming of Jesus. And one of the things that I found very frustrating was my amillennial friends kept trying to symbolize numbers out of the book of Revelation. For example, they would take the 1,260 days that we've seen mentioned with the two witnesses and now with the woman and turned it into 1,260 years. Now, on the face of it, that is perfectly appropriate from a prophetic approach, because we see that happen in the book of Ezekiel, and we see it happen in the book of Daniel. But in the book of Revelation, we see that exact same time period also described as 42 months, and time times and half a time, and 3.5 years. So basically, it seems to me, if you give it a definition from several different angles, using days and months and times and years, it's definitely literal, not figurative. It's not open to being a figurative number. And so that is why I feel very comfortable saying that in the book of Revelation, the focus is on the final 3.5 year day of the Lord confrontation between the forces of God and the forces of the beast leader, Satan, being the puppeteer of that whole thing. One more thing, and this is something that you might have to do some studying on your own from my notes, because I'm not sure I'll get around to going into this in detail. In the book of Revelation, you have a lot of sevens, you know, seven churches and seven stars and seven lampstands and seven thunders and seven bowls and seven this and that and all the others. But you know one thing you don't have seven of? You don't have 7 years. And so I get a little bit frustrated with some of my premillennial friends who insist that the events in the book of Revelation represent a seven-year period, because there is no seven-year mention in the book of Revelation. The only period of time that keeps coming up over and over again is 3.5 years. 3.5 years. 3.5 years. And I think we need to just leave it at that. Let the Bible explain everything in its own terms. 3.5 years, 42 months, 1,260 days, which is just 10 days shy of 3.5 years, and time times and half time. Now, in Revelation 12, so far, in this new vision, we are going to go over that same 3.5 year period, but first, we go backward in time to the very beginning of the war. Genesis chapter number 3, where the serpent deceives Eve and consequences ensue. And during the handing out of those consequences, God predicts, prophesies, threatens to the serpent the following words, Genesis 3:15. I will put enmity, which is a state of hostility, a state of warfare, between you, the serpent, the dragon, Satan, and the woman who was literally Eve, but she is the mother of all living, so she's the first in a series. And between your seed, that is the dragon's seed, and her seed, the woman's seed, he shall bruise you on the head, and you shall bruise him on the heel. And pretty much everyone agrees that this is the first prophecy about the crucifixion, about the atonement, that Jesus won the victory against Satan by voluntarily laying down his life for an atonement for sin. And so he is the seed of woman that was prophesied here. But through the millennia, through the centuries, since Genesis 3:15 was first uttered, women in this specific line were hoping that it would happen in their lifetime. For example, Eve named her firstborn son Cain, which means gotten, because she said, I have gotten a man-child with the help of the Lord. So she was hoping that Cain would be the avenger. Now, he wasn't. It turned out to be radically different than that. But that begins a whole long line, which is why in the symbolism of chapter 12 that we've already talked about, the woman is not just simply Mary, who literally gave birth to Jesus. And the woman is not just simply Israel. The woman is this long chain of those that would participate in the prophecy coming to pass. All these ladies in the genetic code line that results in Jesus coming through the Virgin Mary. And we saw that she gave birth to a son who is going to rule the nations with a rod of iron. That's actually right here in the book of Revelation as well, that he does that. But after she gives birth, the next thing that we read about the dragon, the ancient serpent, Satan, the troublemaker, is that once he sees the baby born, he tries to kill him off. So Revelation 12:13, when the dragon saw that he'd been thrown down to the earth, he pursued the woman who had given birth to the male child. So Satan tried to kill Jesus when he first came into the world, but God has him die and rise again and then ascend on high. And then the story fast forwards to the day that Satan and his bunch are booted out of heaven to planet Earth. And it's a short time left, 3.5 years. And so he decides that he's going to try to do her in, which her, in this case, I believe, would be ethnic Israelis with an affinity toward Jesus as Messiah. That, I think that makes perfect sense in a few more verses ahead of us. And what happens? Verse 14, but the woman was given the two wings of the great eagle so that she might fly from the serpent into the wilderness to the place where she would be nourished for a time, times, and half a time. Now, we've already read back in verse 6 that that exact same period is called 1,260 days. It's just 10 days short of a 3.5 year period. And that number, the 1,260 days, is only mentioned in relationship to the ministry of the two witnesses. And I've already shared with you my conviction that those two witnesses, who in my opinion are probably Enoch and Elijah, pulled forward into this time period from where they used to live, I believe those two witnesses are being mentioned here with the term two wings of the great eagle. And my reason for that is following the wording. Wings of a great eagle, there's only one really good other place that ties in here, and that's Exodus 19:4, which is all about the Exodus. And God says, you yourselves have seen what I did to the Egyptians, that's the plagues, how I bore you, the Israeli people, on eagle's wings and brought you to myself. And of course, the two persons who were involved in the plagues and who were involved in bringing the Israelis to Mount Sinai from Egypt are Moses and Aaron, the two witnesses of that period. So I believe verse number 14 is all about how the two witnesses rescue the ethnic Israelis of a specific region. I think we're talking about the Promised Land. And keep them from being immediately wiped out by the wrath of Satan come to earth. Now, he tries really hard to get him. Verse 15, the serpent poured out water like a flood or a river out of his mouth after the woman to sweep her away with a flood. Now, that imagery is found in the book of Proverbs. It talks about wrath is fierce and anger is like a flood. Who can stand before jealousy? So there is a metaphorical sense of the anger of Satan being like this great flash flood trying to wipe out the members of the woman, the ethnic Israelis, I believe. How literal is the water? I don't know. One of the things we keep referring to about prophecy, future prophecy, is we won't know until it happens, and we've been told that that's the way it happened. Can we be absolutely certain about it? And so I can't construct in my mind a mechanism by which Satan, the fallen angel and his bunch, can use flood water to try to wipe out a bunch of people. There's a few dams in the nation of Israel, but they're not really located in any place where you'd be able to use them as a weapon to break the dam and flood an encampment site below there. So we'll just have to wait and see how that plays out. But we do know this, verse 16, The earth came to the help of the woman. The earth opened its mouth and swallowed the river that the dragon had poured from his mouth. So he can't get the job done. He can't wipe out this group of ethnic Israelis that are immediately there in the Holy Land, in the Promised Land, whenever the day of the Lord takes place. And I believe it's because of the two witnesses. I believe the two witnesses will be the key heroes in saving this group, and will take them up to Jerusalem. Specifically, I think they'll go to the Temple Mount, and they will protect this group throughout their ministry, which is 1,260 days, which is exactly the time period that this woman is nourished and protected. And then, of course, we know that the two witnesses will be killed about 10 days before the second coming of Jesus Christ. Now, what happens next? Because that's where we're going. This is the pivot point. Verse 17 says, "Then the dragon became furious with the woman." So he's ticked off that he could not take her out. He's barred from getting her. And so he went off to make war, and that wording gets used in expressing this confrontation in the final 3.5 years on several occasions. So he goes off to make war on the rest of her seed. And you should pay attention to that wording here. It is the Genesis 3:15 wording. So Satan can't get to the immediate group, probably because of the two witnesses. And so he leaves and storms off to see if he can track down and kill other parts of her seed. Now, who is that? Well, it would include ethnic Israelis and all other ethnic groups that have a common faith. That is, they believe that Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus, is the Messiah. And that is why it's going to be against the saints. And we've seen that the bad guy, the beast leader, as I've already started referring to him, he's the guy on the white horse when the first seal is broken. This guy's goal is going to be to wage war on the saints, to rub them out, if at all possible. And he will be motivated by his puppeteer, Satan, who is right here being talked about as making war on the rest of her offspring, on those who keep the commandments of God. Now, don't immediately think Torah. Don't think Ten Commandments. Don't think Jewish commandments. Because John has been writing books to believers not too long before the book of Revelation, and he was talking about the commandment of love, the royal law, the royal commandment, and we'll see that other places in the New Testament documents. And so it's love God with 100% of your being and love your neighbor as yourself. This is the core of God's commandment. Jesus said before he went to the cross, he said, "I'm going to give you a new commandment, love one another. Love like I've loved you." So when it says those who keep the commandments of God, I think it's talking about the love commandment. And who hold to the testimony of Jesus. That's the key. These folks are believers in Yehoshua HaMashiach, Jesus the Messiah, Jesus the Christ. And so whether they are ethnic Israelis or Gentiles of whatever ethnic background, the dragon wants them dead because they believe in the Lamb who is on his way. Now think about that. Satan knows this because when he was kicked off into planet Earth, We're told in the text that he knows he has little time. So he knows he's on a countdown clock of 3.5 years, and that Jesus is coming back at the end of that time. And so Satan is effectively going to try to cut off all support for the coming King of Kings and the Lord of Lords. He's going to try to wipe out all supporters of Jesus, wipe out all his followers on planet Earth. He is going to also try to barricade, not just simply planet Earth, but Jerusalem itself. We'll see that before this story is finished. He will try to barricade Jerusalem itself against the second coming of Jesus. Now, he won't get any of that done. But this vision stream that we've now moved into is all about the war between the seed of the serpent and the seed of woman who put their faith in Jesus. So next thing that we read is a transition to the next vision that John describes. Now, it's still part of the same vision of the war, but it's a vision of players or a vision of the key components in this war. So we are told he, meaning the dragon, stood on the sand of the sea. Now, I'm not going to be dogmatic about this, but I will recommend to you, I will suggest strongly to you that the sea in mind here is the Mediterranean Sea, the Sea of the Old World, from our perspective here in the New World. Because I am convinced that most of these things that we're going to be reading about during the 3.5 year period, they are going to be taking place in the Old World, around the Mediterranean basin. And one of my reasons for believing that is because the imagery we're going to start reading in chapter 13 is taken from Daniel chapter 2. And Daniel chapter 7 is all about a vision that Daniel saw coming up out of the Med. All right, let's read in Revelation 13 first. So we've got the dragon standing on the seashore, the Med shore, I think probably somewhere along the eastern end after his failed attempt to wipe out that first group of ethnic Israeli believers that are surrounding themselves around the two witnesses. So that would be near Jerusalem, so probably down on the coast now. So John says, I saw a beast rising up out of the sea, so up out of the Med, with 10 horns, you know, like animal horns, either like the horns on a bull, or I would suggest maybe more like the horns on a rhinoceros, okay? Except they're in a row along that ridge line of the nose. And he has 7 heads. Now the horns are on one of the 7 heads. But there's 7 heads total. That's going to be important. With 10 diadems on its horns. Diadems are kingly crowns, as opposed to our Stephanos, the victor's crown that we've talked about so far in the book of Revelation. So each of these horns has like a kingly ornament on it. And then blasphemous names on its heads. So the 7 heads have blasphemous names. Now, what makes the names blasphemous are claims against the true name. Because the name of God, he who is, and the name of Jesus, taken from that, he who is salvation. That's where true salvation is located. All other names that go against those names are blasphemous, and that's going to be key. Now, verse 2, the beast that I saw was like a leopard. So the general body shape, John says, was like a leopard. Maybe it even had the spots. Its feet were like a bear's feet. Its mouth was like a lion's mouth, you know, with the teeth and perhaps even in a roar. And to it, the dragon gave his power and his throne and great authority. Now, that verse is going to tell us that this beast is going to turn into Satan's puppet, which I believe is one of the reasons it looks like him. Remember, the description at the beginning of chapter 12 was a description of Satan in his power. But this beast is also 10 horned. Is seven headed. And so this is a government that is going to serve as Satan's surrogate to get his anti-Christian war carried out. And I think we can identify the symbolism here in Revelation 13 by the next time we're together, going to where these exact same animals are mentioned in a vision relating to the final days. That's Daniel chapter number 7. So mark your place in Revelation 13, Daniel chapter 7, and pray about it. And we will come back next time and get right back into God's inspired word.